Now today, as we continue in this series of the mighty acts of God and His miracles, we'll be dealing more with miracles rather than mighty acts, but nevertheless, we see a number of very encouraging and upbuilding things in these various lessons here that we're covering. Now we will recall, just by a summary here, let's go back to Genesis, the 35th chapter, and beginning in verse number 23, we have a summary of Jacob's children by his wives. We had the sons of Leah were Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, Simeon and Levi, and Judah and Issachar and Zebulun. So she had six children. So of the four wives that Jacob had, she had the most. She had six, where the other three had six between them. The sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin. So those were his two primary wives. Then he had the handmaids that were wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali, and the sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad and Asher. So here are the 12 sons. Now going over to the 37th chapter, we saw here that Rachel had two sons, Joseph and Benjamin. You will recall she died during childbirth, giving birth to Benjamin. Now we read in chapter 37 in verse 1, Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger in the land of Canaan, and these are the generations of Jacob. Now we're dealing specifically with Joseph here. I'll tell you why Joseph is so important. You will remember that when the blessings were conferred upon the sons of Jacob, he gave the scepter promise to Judah, but the birthright belonged to Joseph. Reuben lost the birthright. He was his firstborn son and should have had it, but rather he gave it to the firstborn son of Rachel rather than the firstborn son of Leah. So the birthright was Joseph's. That is extremely important because it is by that means that all of the great physical promises that God gave to Abraham were fulfilled and are being fulfilled in the descendants of Joseph. Now Joseph was 17 years old. He was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. So he was actually with Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. We don't know what they were doing. The Bible doesn't tell us. It could have been hostility and antagonism toward Joseph himself because of a statement we're going to read here in a few moments. And Jacob did make some mistakes. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age and he made him a coat of many colors. Actually, the youngest, as we say in modern parlance, a baby of the family, as far as we have any reference to, was Benjamin. But he had this special love for Joseph because he was the firstborn son of Rachel, the woman that he really loved the deepest. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. So it generated hostility and jealousy and envy because he showed a favorite in that way. And parents can be very easily guilty of that, and as a result, you generate all kinds of problems in the family. This is what was happening. You see, you have 12 children from four different women. Now, is that conducive to harmony? Not likely. We already saw in the earlier examples of the competition that existed between the two women. So it could not have led to a happy family atmosphere in certain respects. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. Now, he might have been a little indiscreet in the way he handled it, but by the same token, when you find the end result of the story, it was probably good that they heard the dream, because they're going to have it rubbed in their faces later on. Well deserved. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shall you indeed reign over us, and shall you indeed have dominion over us? It didn't take them long to figure out what it was all about. And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. You know, he was young, he was naive, he had a lot to learn. He probably didn't understand about human nature yet. And he dreamed yet another dream. I'm calling these dreams to your attention because they are absolutely providential. They are from God. What he's really doing here, he's telling this young man what's in store for him in the future. He's giving him a clue of what awaits him. And he told it to his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee in the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. Now, I would say you should be aware of the time sequence here, because I don't necessarily conclude that this is happening after the death of Rachel. This dream may have been given prior to the death of Rachel, because, you see, remember, his mother died. If the dream was given after the death of Rachel, then the term mother probably applies to one of the other ladies who may have sort of taken him up and viewed him as a son. So we see here that Joseph had these dreams. Now, these dreams were supernatural dreams, as we will see. Now, we know the story then. I won't go through all the details here of what happened, because we want to deal specifically with the miraculous events that occurred, and not necessarily every detail. But just to summarize it, you know that they hated him, and so they decided to kill him. When they saw him coming, because he had gone out to where they were caring for the flocks, notice what they said in verse 19. They said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. So he had a reputation of being a dreamer, but notice what the marginal rendering says, this master of dreams. Now, they may have viewed it contemptuously, all right, but indeed he was showing that there was something providential and very special about him with respect to this gift that he had received from God. Now, they were going to kill him. They conspired against him to slay him, as we read here. And then Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands. He was the oldest one, see, he was the one most responsible. And I won't read the whole story, but you remember he said, just put him in a pit, and he was going to come back later and rescue him and take him home to his dad. But in the meantime, here was Judah. And this is a proclivity of his descendants ever since. Look at it here in verse 26. Judah said to his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. So they did. They sold him into slavery. And we read here in verse number 36, the Midianites, they took him, they purchased him for 20 pieces of silver. And they took him down to Egypt, we read in verse 36, unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. And if you'll notice, your marginal rendering says here that he was a eunuch. And my marginal rendering says, but the word does signify not only eunuchs, but also chamberlains, courtiers, and officers. So I'll put it this way. He may or may not have been a eunuch. But I would say this, if he was a eunuch, that would certainly explain the conduct of his wife. And that may have been the case. We don't know for sure. And if it says here he was an officer of Pharaoh's and a captain of the guard, and captain of the guard says chief marshal, Hebrew chief of the slaughter men or executioners. So he was the head executioner for Pharaoh, for executing criminals. Now, there's one little interlude I want to just mention, bring to your attention here, because it is represents, again, some of the acts of God. It isn't directly related to Joseph. This little chapter here comes in between, but I do want to call it to your attention. You do recall here that Judah, he married a certain Canaanite. Now, don't assume that these Canaanites were dark peoples. All the evidence is that they were the same stock, fundamentally the same stock as all the people from Mesopotamia, and were the light-complected peoples we know today. There were some darker ones in there earlier that were driven out, but I think we can assume Amorites and Canaanites and all those tribes were fundamentally the same stock of people as the Israelites were, descendants of Shem, that is, Semitic. Well, she bare two sons, Ur and Onan. And Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, as we read in verse 6, whose name was Tamar. And Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. We don't know the details of what he did. I think we can assume that he probably was copying all the habits and behavior of the Canaanites around him. Perhaps influenced by his mother's family, whatever the case was, but he turned out to be a person that God did not want in his heritage. He killed him. And Judah said to Onan, "Go in unto thy brother's wife and marry her and raise up seed to thy brother." Which shows that this was a custom that long predated even the law of Moses, because that became a law in ancient Israel. And Onan knew that the seed should not be his, and it came to pass when he went into his brother's wife that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him also. He would not assume the responsibility he should have assumed. And he was undoubtedly in a similar class and behavioral pattern as his older brother, and so God killed him also. So that demonstrates that God certainly has the power to intervene anytime he so chooses. Well, let's see. Now let's go up to Genesis, the 39th chapter. This little interlude out of the way. Now we're dealing with Joseph here, remember. He was sent over into Egypt, and he became a servant or slave for Potiphar, who was captain of the guard. So we read here in verse number 1 of Genesis 39. Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. Now what we're really seeing here is a whole series of events that God had already let Joseph know about. He didn't tell him how it was going to be accomplished or how it would take place, but he certainly gave him enough insight to know that there were going to be some very providential, important things occur in his life, and he would become a very, very prominent figure eventually. But it had to come the hard way, because his brothers conspired, and the very pattern and the things that they did was exactly what eventually led to the fulfillment of the prophecy. You find out later on that when he finally encountered his brothers on it, he didn't blame them for it. He said it was really providential, and that God had sent him there to save his people. He realized it. He probably didn't realize it at this point. This was probably a pretty black period in his life. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. So here's the intervention now, God dealing with Joseph and absolutely placing his blessing upon him and making everything he did prosper. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. He was like, you know, the man that touched everything and it turned to gold. I mean, he couldn't do anything wrong. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. He had that much confidence in him. He was a very competent young man, and he had God's blessing in every way. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer of his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew aught not he had, save the bread which he did eat. So he had someone he could turn the whole thing over to. He didn't have to worry about it anymore, and he was blessed and prosperous in every way. Why? Because God was behind pulling the strings. But notice what it says here, right in context with the next verse. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. The Hebrew should actually read, he was beautiful in form and beautiful in appearance. We wouldn't use that word today. We'd say handsome. He was handsome. In other words, he was well-built and he was very handsome. Boy, look at the next verse. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." You talk about being in an untenable position. How in the world are you going to survive that kind of a circumstance? Well, there was only one course that Joseph could take. That was the right thing. And you'll know why. You see the conduct of Joseph and the things that he did in his life. You'll see why he was Israel's favorite. Not like his brothers, I mean, who had some glaring faults and sins. Practically every one of them. When the whole family, all those boys got together and conspired to kill him. What a contrast from Joseph. You can see why the birthright went to Joseph. And he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater than this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So really he appeals to two things. Number one, the loyalty and respect he has for his master, which this would be a heinous sin against his own master, and even more important, it was a great sin against God. So here you find that adultery was a sin against God long before the time of Moses. People will try to tell you today, well, you know, that law, the Ten Commandments, they were introduced with Moses, and that's the Old Covenant law, and we don't have to abide by that today. And if you say to him, oh, that's right, is that right? Okay, it's all right for me to go out and commit adultery with my neighbor's wife. And oh, no, we don't mean that. See, what they mean is, you can get divorced and remarried and commit adultery that way, and you can certainly break the Sabbath, because you can keep some other day rather than the Sabbath day. But I'll guarantee you one thing, here was the law of God in effect long before Moses was ever heard of. It was adultery to become involved with another man's wife. And it was a sin against God, as he said here. And it came to pass that she spake to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not unto her to lie with her or to be with her. Smart man. What does the Bible say? Flee fornication. Don't be dumb enough to put yourself in a series of circumstances where it can happen. If you're wise and you're smart, you will not permit that to happen. And Joseph was smart enough to figure that out. He avoided her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men in the house with him. He should have had somebody with him. And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Well, I won't read the rest of the story. I mean, you know, all know the old saying, don't you? Hell knows no wrath like a woman scorned. Actually, that works both ways. There are some pretty jealous men that can't take no for an answer, too. There are plenty of them. They call them stalkers today. So we know the rest of the story here then. She lied and told her husband. And we read here in verse 19, It came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which he spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison. Now, I suppose he probably could have had the power to have executed him, whatever the punishment was. I read in one of the commentaries that the usual punishment for adultery among the Egyptians was 1,000 strokes, which would probably kill somebody, because if you remember anything about British law on the sea, when they would some sailor would do something wrong, they'd either whip him, and a lot of those whippings were so severe they'd die from it, or they'd keel haul. Anyway, there's a comment here in Psalm 105, verse number 18, we want to look at. Because it's talking here about Joseph. And verse 17 says, He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold as a servant. In other words, God was protecting and looking out for his people in advance. And so he's saying here, this is what he did to Joseph. But notice what happened to Joseph. Whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. So it wasn't all peaches and cream. So he was put in prison, and he may have been abused to a certain degree to start out with, but then notice what happened. This is what I'm emphasizing. This is the point I'm getting at. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. Now I should point out, this was really a prison for VIPs. This was not a common prison. And by virtue of the fact that Joseph was in that prison with those VIPs is what eventually led to the contact with Pharaoh himself. If he had been in some standard prison where they put people of the lower classes, he probably never would have been heard of again if God hadn't intervened. Anyway, the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison and whatsoever they did there. He was the doer of it. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So again, see, even though the circumstances were very, very bad, God turned it right around to Joseph's advantage. And we're going to see now the result of this. He's in this VIP prison. He has charge, direct charge of all these VIP prisoners. And what happens? It came to pass after these things, Genesis 40, verse 1, that the butler or cupbearer is what this really means, one who was responsible for serving the wines and everything, of the king of Egypt in his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued in the ward. In other words, they were there until the Pharaoh could finally devote his time and dig out the facts as to what had happened here. It appears as what has happened here, because one of them was a cupbearer and the other was a cook, that it might have been a plot to poison Pharaoh, and so he didn't know which one was guilty, and so he put them in prison to find out. And they dreamed a dream, both of them. This was providential. Why? Because it's going to be used by Joseph to his advantage later on. They dreamed a dream, both of them, each man a dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. In other words, they knew that these dreams had some kind of significance, all right. But they didn't know the answer, and there wasn't any way they could find out, and they were depressed over it. They wanted to know. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward in his lord's house, saying, "Wherefore look you so sadly today?" And they said to him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" So evidently he had made known the true God to them. Now whether or not they ever accepted it is another matter, but he wasn't hiding his God from them. "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." And the chief butler told the dream to Joseph. Now, I won't go through the dreams. You've done that to yourselves. You know, you can do that any time. But the dream, the interpretation, as we read here in verse 13, so Joseph was inspired now with this interpretation. He said, "Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee to thy place. And thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup in his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler." He did mention, we read in verse 14, "Think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me in the dungeon." Well, we find out people are not very gracious after things go well for them. They have very short memories. Now, that was a good interpretation. So the other man, since he heard a good interpretation, he thought, well, he'd hear a good interpretation too. So we read here, "Now when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold," and he describes it, and then notice what Joseph does, he tells him. Might as well tell him and prepare him for his death, because that's what was coming. He had 3 days to prepare for it. "Yet within 3 days, verse 19, shall Pharaoh lift up thine head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the bird shall eat the flesh from off thee." It's the way they punished in those days. They beheaded them, and then they hung them up and let them be eaten by buzzards. "And it came to pass on the third day," which was Pharaoh's birthday. You only find a few mentions of birthdays in the Bible. This is one of them. Another one is the birthday of Herod, when John the Baptist was beheaded. "And he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief baker among his servants, And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him. Not human nature. Well, it took another intervention on God's part now to begin to bring about things to the fore. Now, let's keep in mind, see, when Joseph was a young man, he was 17 years old, we read about, and it was shortly after that time when his brothers sold him into slavery. If you want to look over here a little bit further, if I can find it, verse 46 of chapter 41. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So 13 years he was in Egypt before he assumed that responsibility. Now you're going to find a number of things that occurred during that time period. Not only did he learn the language very, very proficiently, because as you recall, when his brothers came down, they had to speak through interpreters. He knew the Hebrew language, but he didn't want them to know he knew it. But he also knew the Egyptian tongue very, very fluently. So he had mastered the language. In addition to that, all the experience he had in Potiphar's house gave him, and the responsibility he had absolutely groomed him for this kind of a thing. And then in addition, in the prison, dealing and handling these VIP prisoners, he knew all the protocols and everything that was required for the kind of office he was going to take. Actually, what is going on here, he was in a period of training for 13 years. Now, here God intervenes again. Chapter 41. It came to pass at the end of 2 full years. So the butler or the cupbearer forgot about it, and for 2 years longer, Joseph languished in that prison. Maybe not languished, but he was still stuck there, desiring to get out. And Pharaoh dreamed. Now, was this dream providential? Was this from God? Oh, you bet it was from God. Because notice verse number 28 of this same chapter. God is about to do what he shows unto Pharaoh. So what had to happen here is that this dream had to be given to someone with such power and prestige that he could do something about it. What if the dream had been given to somebody of a much lesser rank, even if within the Egyptian government? He went and told Pharaoh. Do you think Pharaoh would have paid any attention? This had to be given to the most powerful man in the nation because it was intended to have such a shock upon him that he would do something about it when he saw the interpretation. So God revealed events by means of dreams. This is one of the ways by which God does reveal things. Let's notice, for example, Numbers 12, verse number 6. He said, this is God speaking here, the Lord speaking. He said, hear now my words. Here's what the Lord says. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known to him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream. So God reveals himself by visions and dreams. He also reveals himself by speaking directly. He also reveals himself by sending angels. In Pharaoh's case, he revealed what he was going to do to Pharaoh. But Pharaoh had to have an interpretation of it. So Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river, and behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine and fat-fleshed, and they fed in the meadow, indicating there was plenty of pasture and everything was really prosperous. And behold, 7 other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine on the brink of the river, and the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kine. So Pharaoh awoke. Now, you've all had dreams, I'm sure, where you wake up and you can't remember what the dream was. It's happened to all of us, hasn't it? But you've also had dreams where they've been so vivid, you just wake up and you just thank God it was a dream. I mean, it is so realistic, and you do not forget it. Well, that's what this dream was. This was a shocker. And Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed the second time, so he went back to sleep. So usually when you wake up out of a dream, you remember, don't you, very vividly. He remembered it all right. And he slept and dreamed the second time. Behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good, or fat and good. And behold, 7 thin ears, and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank and full ears. And a Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. And it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. In other words, he was agitated in his mind. This was really disturbing. And he was so agitated and so upset by it, it was so realistic and so dramatic to him that we read here, he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof, and Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. So, you know, even these people that dabble in these things, if they happen to get something right, it's usually a lucky guess. And the real interpretation and understanding of these things comes from God. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh. See the circumstances now that brought it about? Here was Joseph in this VIP prison who came in direct contact with a right-hand man of Pharaoh. It couldn't have happened hardly any other way. So when you stop and consider the injustice that was done to him by this immoral wife of Potiphar's, the truth of the matter is it was providential and it was being worked out for his benefit and for the fulfillment of this calling. There was hardly any other way that he could have become known. In such a dramatic, vivid way. You see, maybe Potiphar could have introduced him to Pharaoh some other time, but I mean, those VIP people that have slaves working for them, they don't go around introducing their slaves to people. So this had to be some dramatic thing that really got Pharaoh's attention. And then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. So it took this to jog his memory back to what had happened. He had an awful short memory. You'd think that by virtue of the fact that this man had prophesied that he'd be restored, he'd remember that. That would really be vivid in his mind, but he forgot it. But he was now jogged back to that incident. And he said, Pharaoh was wroth with his servants and put me in ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream in one night. I and he, we dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. There was there with us a young man, an Hebrew, servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams, to each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass as he interpreted us, so it was me he restored to mine office, and him he hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. In other words, he presented himself in a very neat manner, and they probably gave him some of the finest clothes that the Egyptians made for that very purpose. I don't necessarily think that it was Joseph's clothing. It was probably what was provided for him. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So what did Joseph do? Notice his attitude. He wasn't arrogant. He wasn't puffed up. He didn't think he was a cock of the walk. He gave all the credit to God, and that's where the honor belonged, and he said that's where the answer would come from. And he wasn't afraid to talk about God to Pharaoh. Now I think we should also recognize that back in that time period, men hadn't drifted as far as they drifted later on. And there was more knowledge of God. You remember Abimelech, for example? He was deathly afraid of even becoming involved with Isaac's or whichever wife it was, because you remember he said he didn't want to displease God. So there was more knowledge of God in those days than there is today, I do believe. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, in my dream, behold, I stood on the bank of the river. And there came up, I won't rehearse the whole thing, you know the story here. He rehearses the dream again here from verses 17 through 24. Now Joseph standing there in front of the court, in front of Pharaoh. No doubt he was well versed in the language. He knew the protocols. He wasn't embarrassed or necessarily even felt out of place. He had been hobnobbing, so to speak, with these VIPs down this prison for some period of time. So what happened? Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. Yeah, it was emphasized. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. So you see, it was a revelation from God. It was a miracle from God. But it was really being done, I can tell you this, for the benefit of his own people and the fulfillment of the promises that God had given to Abraham. That's why this whole incident was taking place. The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he shows to Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine. And all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now keep in mind, the production and prosperity of Egypt depended on the Nile River. You see what happened, remember, the Nile River heads up clear in Central Africa. Flows thousands of miles with all kinds of tributaries running into it. And during the rainy season, when all that water comes into that Nile River, then it comes down into the delta and it overflows its banks, and it goes over all that land area and soaks it down good and gets it all in shape for a good productive crop. Now, if it was too much water and it was too much flooding, it would do damage, do excessive damage, and they couldn't plant it. If it was too little, it wouldn't overflow and there wouldn't be any crops out here. So he's giving him a warning here of what's going to take place. There are going to be 7 years of famine brought about by a dramatic water fulfillment. Now, as he says in verse 33, therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this. So he didn't hesitate to give him advice and tell him what to do about it too. You can certainly see God was inspiring him as he stood up there talking to the most powerful man in that whole nation, and Egypt was probably one of the most powerful nations in the whole world at that time. Let him set a man wise and discreet over the land. Let Pharaoh do this. Let him appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in seven plenteous years. So what he was doing is he was storing up grain for these 7 years of famine by taking a fifth part. Then by the time the 7 years were up, they would have a sufficient amount to carry them on through the 7 years of famine. That the food, as we read here in verse 36, shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, and the land perish not through famine. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, in the eyes of all his servants. And God gave him favor. There wasn't even any argument. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? So here was Pharaoh acknowledging God. It doesn't say he necessarily understood everything about him, but he certainly saw this unusual, very talented young man standing in front of him here, only 30 years of age. Now, you will recall here that this recommendation was made to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, forasmuch as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And as we read here in verse 46, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And even at that, Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paananiah, and he gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah. And if you'll notice your marginal rendering, Prince of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. So what we're seeing taking place here is that he actually married him into the higher class, into the high class people. Now I think if you're aware, the Egyptians were just as light as the Israelites were. The only reason they seemed to appear darker is because of the suntans you see on a lot of them, but the color of skin wasn't any different than anybody else at that time in that particular region of the world. So that shows you how God had fulfilled those promises that he made to Joseph. and that he was elevating him to that great office for a very important purpose. Now, I pointed out, remember, he dreamed the two dreams of the sheaves and the family, all of them doing obeisance to him. Now, let's go to chapter 42. Remember, this famine continued for some period of time. And we read in verse 3 of chapter 42, and Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. Verse 6, chapter 42, verse 6, Joseph was the governor over the land, and he it was that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came down and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. See, those prophecies are being fulfilled. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly to them. That's the first instant. Now let's go over to chapter 43. And we see, I won't go through all the details here. I think you're all aware of them. They made two or three trips back and forth, and he was making them sweat throughout the process and had to bring back their younger brother, Benjamin. And notice chapter 43, verse 26. And when Joseph came home, he actually had them the second time they came down and walked to his home. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present, which was in their hand under the house. They brought a present down there for Joseph, and bowed themselves to him on the earth. And verse 28, they answered, "Thy servant, our father, is in good health. He is yet alive." And they bowed down their heads and made obeisance. Yeah, they were hostile and antagonistic when he told them the dream. Years later, it was another story altogether. Notice chapter 44, verse number 14. This is when he put the cup, remember, in Benjamin's sack, and then deliberately had it discovered so he could bring them back in great fear. And then Judah, we read in verse 14, Judah and his brethren came to Joseph's house, for he was yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. And then we find in the next chapter, Joseph revealed himself. Notice what he says here. You see, he saw the whole thing as providential, because indeed it was. He said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." Chapter 45, verse 4. "Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life." So the whole thing he saw was a direct result of God's intervention for the deliverance of his own people and for the fulfillment of these great promises. Now look at it in this way, because notice verse 9. "Haste you and go up to my father and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, tarry not, and thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen. And thou shalt be near to me, thou and thy children and thy children's children and thy flocks and thy herds and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine." Let's look at it this way. Where else could Israel have grown into a great, powerful group of people had it not been under the direct power and control of someone who was able to give them that protection? Do you think they could have grown into that people in the land of Canaan itself with all those Amorites and Hittites and all those people around there? Very unlikely. They would have been at war and probably decimated many, many years before that from the Amorites and those various other warlike tribes there. But in Egypt, they had protection and safety, and they grew into a great nation down there. And so notice verse 1 of chapter 46. "And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake to Israel in the visions of the night." So here was another revelation to Israel in his older age. "And said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here I am. And he said, I am God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation." Now we know that when they came out of the land of Egypt, there were 600,000 men on foot besides women and children. And if you figure 600,000, then you're figuring a multitude of at least 3 to 5 million people came out of the land of Egypt. 3 to 5 million. Indeed, they did become a great nation. And he said, "I am the God of thy father, fear not." He said, "I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt." And notice his promise. "And I will again surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes." But he was really telling him, as you're going to die in Egypt, and when you die, Joseph will be the one to close your eyelids. See, because when people die, contrary to all the things you see in the movies, you know, they're all lying there and they got their eyes closed. It doesn't happen in real life. When people die, their eyes are open. So Joseph would be there at his death. So you see, all of these incidents that occurred to Joseph, and all of these revelations and these dreams were miracles on God's part, revealing what he was going to do. Not only did he deal with Joseph, but he dealt with the butler and the chief cook, and he dealt with Pharaoh himself. And he gave Joseph this great gift, and it was for the sole purpose of preserving and blessing the prosperity and the descendants of Abraham, just as God had promised.